You've reached the office of Melinda Morris. I'm either on the phone or away from the desk. If you'll leave me a message, I'll call you as soon as I can.
Property and evidence transferred me to you because I'm supposed to speak to the detective about getting back stuff that's in property and evidence. My name is Gordon, and my phone number is 409-2109. That's 409-2109. And this is referencing case number 2011-21204. That's 2011-21204. I was told that I was supposed to ask for the detective that is assigned to this particular case or something or another like that. Please give me a call back. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. I'd like to talk to the detective assigned to case number 2011-21.
Okay, hold on one second. I don't know who is assigned to that. The only thing I can do is put you up to the detective bureau.
Our state attorney's office is going to accept.
Listen. I know that. I knew you were going to say that, and I'm not blaming you a bit.
That's the law.
No. Hold on. Let me tell you what the real law is. The real law is delay in prosecution of a suit is sufficiently excused, completely, where occasioned solely by the official negligence of the referee, that's Officer Todd Edwards, without contributory negligence of the plaintiff, that's my father, especially where no steps were taken to expedite the case. Now, I did come into your department on at least one occasion, and this one person in CID, he was a sworn officer, pardon my language. I just have to be honest. He was a pure asshole. He acted like he was going to do something, and then he changed his mind and said it was not important. He wanted me to do it or anything. There was nothing that he could do. Now, what I quoted you was Roberson versus Wilson, 51 Southern 849. The Florida Supreme Court made this ruling. Delay in the prosecution is this. I don't know if they're going to do anything. You got a good point there, okay? As far as the state attorney's office, but look, if they say no, I want you to just do your job and put it in writing and do a report, whether they say yes or even if they say no, I want y'all to do a report and investigate this matter by talking to my father and getting the bank numbers and going through the proper steps, because of the fact that if I take any legal action against the state attorney's office, I would hate to take action against y'all. I'm not trying to set y'all up, because if y'all either do a report or don't do a report in the event the state attorney's office says that they are not going to do anything, then it'll be the same difference on your end, except in one instance, y'all will get in huge trouble if I were to take legal action, and I don't want that. Not only that, you never know, they might actually do their job. So what I'm saying is I want there to be a report on the thing so that it can actually have a fair chance. Okay, I'll give you that case law if you would like. If what would be the best way for me to I'm probably going to come to town anyhow to see if those records are in. Do you think Sergeant Shiver's going to be back in his office today?
I don't know. He's up in the CID now. He moved from patrol up to.
Ron's saying someone said that he was working today, but they don't know if he's in. I was thinking of maybe coming in and seeing if those records are in. And I was going to call him first, but he's harder to locate than a Bigfoot. They said he was there this morning, and I just called at the wrong time or something like that. But listen, what happened, this matter with my father is important. Whether y'all can do something or not.
Where did your father live?
My father, I live with him. My mother and I both moved in with him.
What's the address?
821 Alicia Road. My father runs the Bobby Watts Speed Shop. You know, near the skating rink. You probably have seen him before, gone in there and bought a carburetor or a muffler or something. He's very famous and well-known, but he's also very old.
Is he still running the speed shop?
Yeah, he still is. And listen, now, if you talk to my father, or if any officer talks to my father, he will cooperate if you're polite. But if you say, listen, Mr. Watts we're actually honest. We want the bank routing numbers. We're not going to make any promises, and we'll attend to it. They'll give you the bank routing numbers, this, that, and the other. If you go in there and say, your son is being annoying, then he'll say, well, ignore my son. And that'll be your way out, okay? If you say that, then he'll jerk back and recoil, okay? So I'm telling you, I know my father better than anyone up there at your place knows my father. And if you act right towards him, he'll give you the information you need to have a fair crack. If you act overbearing upon him and say, your son's kind of acting weird and annoying us, then he'll clam up. He won't tell you anything. You can just forget it.
Why would he do that?
Hey, I don't know. Everyone's different. That's just a weakness in his personality. I love my father, but I'll be honest, that's just a weakness in his personality. I wouldn't do that, but then again, he's maybe strong in areas that I'm weak, so I'm not going to complain a lot. He's up there actually earning some money while I'm sleeping and doing things like what I'm doing now. I'm busy doing stuff now instead of doing other stuff, because if I don't do this, no one else will. $5,000 is a lot of money. And so in any event, what would be the best way to, now I gave you the call ID number. Were you able to pull up the call to service?
I'll have to call upstairs and have them pull it up for me, print it out.
Oh, okay. I'll give you the date. It was on 8/26 of 2003. And the location of the incident was 833 North Lake Parker.
833 North Lake Parker.
In other words, the Bobby Watts speech off, and it was on 8/26 of 2003.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay, good.
North Lake Parker.
Yeah, it is right there. Bobby Watts.
What is your phone number, Gordon?
Well, you might see it on caller ID, but if you don't, it's 688-9880. My direct cell number is
409-2109.
Yeah, that's prepaid. It'll get me directly, but it's one of those Obama phones. You know things are bad when conservatives are lining up for them suckers. It's got limited minutes. But it's okay for a quick call or meet me or call me back, or it's an emergency or short call or something like that. So the bottom line is that I will caution you. I can't caution you enough. If you're polite and act like you're serious, whether you are or not, but I'm sure you will be, then, and you're polite and say, we don't promise you anything, but we will promise that we try. And he'll give you the bank routing number, and he'll verify this, that, and the other. The checks not only were fraud, they were totally different. They were like different from the ones that the bank issued them. It was obvious fraud. It was not just fraud, it was obvious fraud. I think it was maybe not one big check. I think it was several smaller checks. That's why they were able to do it.
So how did that happen?
What happened is some guy just got on the screen press and made it. Well, obviously some guy got a check from my father in the past.
Check case or a routing number and made some fake checks.
Bingo. Yes, exactly.
Did he pass them around town?
He cashed them himself. He went to a bank and cashed them himself, or someone or something did it. There's one thing I know about my father. Even though I did not actually see the paperwork, I've known my father as long as I've been alive, and something or another happened, and I believe it was exactly what he said. He was quite irate about the issue, which is not only to be honest, but when he was angry about the thing, so I would lay my reputation on the line to tell you that this actually did happen. And the call to service right here says it was a... let me see, what was the reason for the call to service? It's forgery, that's it, forgery. So in other words, it didn't say on there the details of it, but this was the only forgery case I've ever heard my father speak about, and I'm quite sure that the forgery case that had those thousands of dollars go south was the same one that I gave you. I don't know as a definitive fact, but process of elimination says it was the only one, and so you can imagine that's probably the correct one. So it's a forgery case in the sense that that's what they put it. Is that the right word for it, forgery?
Yeah, that's a fraud, forgery.
Whatever, okay.
Counterfeit checks.
Right. So, yeah.
Does your dad work tomorrow?
He works right now. He is there from like 9 to about 4:30.
I can stop what I'm doing and go right now and talk to him. You know what I mean?
I understand.
So I will.
Now, I will tell you one thing. If you want to come by 821 Alicia Road, he'll be here, but his banking information will be up at the shop. I would like for you to do this right here. Call him and talk to him on the phone and get the bank numbers. If you want, I can invoke a three-way and get him on the line if you want.
Okay. I'll go by there and talk to him. How long is he there?
Well, he'll probably be there until around 4, or, well, I think 4:30 is about when he starts leaving, because he's been shutting down a little bit earlier, because his health has been declining a little bit now that he's getting up in years. He's almost 80 years old, and he still works a full day. He actually leaves the house at 4:44 a.m. each morning. I don't know what he does down there, but he opens the stop at about 8:30 or 9, and then he closes at about 4:30 or 5. And then he sits around here, and he goes to bed at around 7. If you could call him right now and get the routing numbers, that will get you the information that you need. You could talk to him, and then later on, he'll be here up until 7, which will buy you additional few hours to come by if you want to come by the house and talk, because we stay at 821 Alicia Road, which is just around the corner.
Okay, I'm going to get by there before he goes home today and have a word with him and see what's going on, what he can tell me, and we'll kind of go from there.
Listen, I really do appreciate it. I cannot promise that he will know everything, but if you were real polite to him, and I think that you will be, I promise that he'll cooperate and at least confirm that the things happen and give you the information. He will certainly not ask you to do anything because he's real introverted, but he will be very glad if you do. And so,
okay.
Listen, Sergeant,
number, I will give you a call back either this afternoon or first thing in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and we'll go from there.
Do you want me to give you his two phone numbers up there or no?
Yeah, let me write those down.
All right, the first one is in the phone book at 686-3411.
686-3411.
And the other one is 687-6141.
687-6141?
Yeah. Now, I want to tell you, the case that you need to talk to the state attorney says Robertson versus Wilson, 51 Southern 849. Not Southern Second, but Southern. It was a 1910 case. But it's still current law. 51 Southern 849, Robertson versus Wilson. Delay in the prosecution and the suit is sufficiently excused where A, B, and C occurred. And if you have any trouble with the state attorney's office, you get in contact with me. I nearly won in court for Terry Schiavo by myself. I lost 4-3 before the Florida Supreme Court in case number SCO3-2420. Scared the pure living hell out of a lot of people. So I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV, but I do know a little bit about law. So I got your back on this if you get into any misunderstandings with some new employees or dishonest employees up at the state attorney's office. And you're going to run into both of them, both actually. Hopefully they're weeding them out, but if you have any trouble with that, I'll give you the case law. And then if y'all do your job and then they say no, then, I mean, I'm not going to hold that against y'all, and it'll be a feather in your cap for trying.
Can you guys
go? All right, Gordon, well, let me get on it, and I will let you know what I find out, man.
Thank you very much, Sergeant Geary, and you have a good one, buddy.
Okay, man.
Good cops.
When you need help finding something at Publix, simply ask the closest associate. He or she will gladly walk you right to the item. No guessing, no trouble. Just the friendly, helpful service you've come to expect at Publix, where shopping is a pleasure. Today is Friday, May 30th. Publix time, 2:01 p.m. Current temperature, 88 degrees.
Partly sunny today, scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the upper 80s, partly cloudy tonight. Showers and thunderstorms likely, lows around 70. Partly sunny Saturday, then becoming mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms likely, highs around 90.
Okay. May 30th of what year, though? What year? What year are we in? All these different years going on, it's getting kind of confusing here. What year is this?
Thank you for calling your National Weather Service office for the Tampa Bay area. This menu will provide you with
the Tampa climate summary as of 7 a.m., May 30th, 2014. So far today, the low temperature has been 71, which occurred at 3:49 a.m. No precipitation has fallen, which leaves the monthly total
at a very unimportant amount. Okay, so we've established it's 2014. Time to click this off and save the tape.
Good afternoon, Sergeant Shimer.
Sergeant Shimer, this is Gordon Watts. I know that you were busy and all that, and you asked for some more time about those records, and so as upset as I was, that was a fair request on your part, but I think it was Tuesday I talked to you. Anyhow, to recap, the long story short is, the report itself even references and makes mention of some records. Y'all got some call traces from Verizon, and of course the call traces kept coming into y'all as regular as the wind blows, but none of the call traces themselves actually appeared in the records, and that was odd, because there was a lot of them that they kept sending y'all all down through the years. What's your take on that? What were you able to find out, or did you have time yet?
I wasn't able to find anything new. Has any of the incidents since 2011 occurred recently?
Oh, yeah. Some of them occurred recently. That's why I went down there and asked them to reopen the case. And they said, this is a 2011 case. And I said, yeah, every time there was new calls, we kept reopening and reshedding and reopening and reshedding it. I don't know if I told you this, but the neighbor across the street had just one harassing phone call. One. They actually put the number in there of all parties, every party's person's party, the harassing number, the recipient number, and every number. And so they
how was it that they were harassing you?
Well, there was a variety of, some of them were telemarketers, but some of them were lewd and lascivious. Obscene, they actually identified me by name, they actually were lewd and lascivious to my mother. One of them was a very unusual call. It was the guy that was the main suspect. He called right before before Detective O'Neill called, and he just called out of the blue. And even though he was the prime suspect, and he has emailed me about 700 times that I can document, he's a pure nutcase. He didn't seem harassing, and I believe that there was people that were imitating him. So I don't believe that he was actually the guilty party, even though he actually sends me emails all the time and harasses me through email. He's not threatening me, and I don't think he is committing any crime other than just being nutty. But the bottom line is the call trace data kept coming to y'all from Verizon repeatedly. And if you look in that case number that I gave you, you can actually see Officer Jason Leggett. He was the only officer that did not think a crime committed, which was he made him an outlier, kind of on the far extreme left. But he was good to document that he got call trace data that came in. Because sometime subsequent to the initial thing, like a year later, there was additional harassing phone calls. And so he acknowledged in the report, and he said that it was a non-working number. So what happened was he made reference to it, but the actual call trace data never found its way in the report. That's odd. Did you want me to show you a copy of that, or can you get a copy to take my, or do you take my word on that? That he actually received the stuff and made reference to it. And more recently, Sergeant Marshall Lord said that they didn't get the stuff to have him refax it. So this time they didn't just put the case number, they put it to the attention of Sergeant Marshall Lord and Officer Fetz. And so they got it this time. This was the confidential call trace data, which was supposed to go in the record. And even though Verizon wouldn't give it to me, it's not confidential because, it's just phone numbers. And that's the same stuff that I was able to get on my neighbor. I don't know why I decided to research them, but something hit my spirit, and I did, and voila, I found a case just like mine, except that they actually jumped on it, plus they actually put the numbers in there and all that.
Uh-huh.
And so if the police department had been unwilling to do something, everyone's contact information was there, and you could have gone to the news media or a private attorney or the state attorneys or the sheriff's department or Detective O'Neill said that there were some 813 numbers, and he actually saw the call trace data, and he said it's not in our jurisdiction, and so I said, well, I don't know that. I can't see the data. I'm taking your word. So in any case, I guess then the bottom line is that the stuff that was faxed over to y'all never found its way into the stuff, the call trace data that was faxed from 2011 and 2012, because it had to be reopened a few times. They kept making reference to it, but it never actually got into the records. That's just really weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. Would you like for me to show you would you like for me to show you a copy of the report that Officer Jason Leggett wrote making a reference to that, and as well show you the call trace date on my end? In other words, what was on our bill? It wouldn't show the phone number, but it showed that we were billed for the traces.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like for me to show you that? Would that make your job easier to give you more political pull or something? Or
Not necessarily. I've seen Jason Leggett's report.
Oh, good. Then you saw that he made reference to that he received call trace data. He received it, but I didn't. I don't think that he intentionally meant anything by this, but the impression that I get was that either through carelessness or maliciousness, that everyone is important. The phone company is important. The state attorney's office is important. The police department is important. The neighbors are important, but I'm not. But we're not important. Me and my mother and my father, who were getting the harassing phone calls. He was actually mainly where he's a kind of not a main player in this, but you know, by proxy. And that's just, you know, I'm not saying it was intentional, but it's not right that everyone gets access to the crucial information except the person involved, the person at the center of it. And so the crucial data that would actually tell who it was there. Now, Detective Jim O'Neill said something real key. He said that if it was traced to an IP address, that there was no way they could figure out who it was. And he's well-intentioned. He put up with me arguing with him on the phone for a good half hour, I'm sure, and he almost hung up on me, but he didn't. So I think he's a good police officer, and he's also very smart. He's been doing this for years, is what I gather from talking to him. But I taught him something he didn't know, and he will even admit to you this. I said, look, I don't know if I use this analogy, but let's say that someone threatened they used a voice over an internet protocol with an IP address, and they say they threatened the president or something crazy, okay? That's not right. I'm not advocating, but let's say it happened. You don't think that the FBI would be able to trace that out? They would trace it back to the IP address, and they would trace the IP address to whoever paid the bill, because there's always a money trail. Someone pays the bill, or if it was a phone number, they trace it to the cell phone or the home phone. You don't think that they would not be able to figure that out? And so the point of it is Detective Jim O'Neill is a good cop, but I think that he didn't reach his full potential because of the corruption in your department that was in the recent past. I don't mean this in an offensive way, but he missed something that was so obvious that I figured out. I'm not a cop. I'm smart, but I'm not a cop. And so what happens is that this kind of troubles me. Then the records that are supposed to be in the records are not in there. I mean, it's just a bunch of bumbling mistakes. That y'all guys are better than that. It's just basically simple stuff there. And even though it wasn't the most important case in the world, he agreed with me that there was a laws broken and whatnot, but he pointed out that he reminded me that there was no actual harm done. You know, no one was actually threatened or harmed. But the fact of the matter is that the records were there, and they were unable to trace them because he didn't know that an IP address could be traced back to the owner. We don't know if it was an IP address, but that's what we guess might have happened. But they actually traced a real number. On my end, they can spoof the number. Matter of fact, when he called me from the front desk or from wherever his office was, it showed up different on my end. You know that y'all guys do that with the phone company, and y'all have an arrangement with them for on some of your phone lines to do that, right?
I don't know specifically that that is the case.
But you do know this phone spoofing is possible technologically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So the bottom line, but the phone company, when it goes to the phone company, since the people that made the call pay the bill, you don't think that phone company has trouble figuring out who they are, do you? You know what I'm saying? And so
that's a good question.
I'm not really
familiar with the phone company.
But yeah, but I'm so well now. Yeah, if you wait for a good number of years, some of the stuff, the records may disappear. But I guarantee you, they know who pays the bills. And whenever something happens, since the person paid the bill, when they trace the number, it traces to the real number, and then whoever pays the bill is someone that they can identify. And so for him to say that it was a spoof number and they had trouble, he said they were getting calls from Nigeria and they couldn't trace them. And of course, if it went through an internet, voice over internet protocol, it would mean that you'd have to trace it from the phone company to the IP address, and then for the IP, instead of a phone number, it would be an IP address, and you just ask the internet service provider who pays rent to that. I guarantee you that it can be traced. There was
sure it can be traced, but you still have to be able to identify the person that actually made the call.
Now, I did something very unique. What I did is I tape-recorded the people that were using obscene language, and normally person is not legally able to be tape-recorded because this is a two-party line state, but the courts have consistently found, and Detective O'Neill even agreed with me, that there's no expectation of privacy when a person is making lewd and lascivious calls. And secondly, the courts, even if there is an expectation of privacy, I can give you case law where it shows it's not one in which the courts are willing, one in which the public is willing to protect. Besides that, since the people are doing this, they wouldn't want to be identified. They're not going to come forward at all. You know what I'm saying? So I can easily identify it because I got the tape recorders and reel-to-reels out and even pulled out a few camcorders out of mothballs. Because at first, some of them slipped through the cracks because I wasn't expecting it. But then when you get hit by the there is disease, and then the immune system comes online, the resistance goes up. Mm-hmm. And so, in any case, I got quite a bit of reel-to-reel tape, quite a bit. So the laws are make quite a few exceptions for that. So, in any case, the bottom line is that there was one other thing. Sergeant Gary is looking into this. My father, I didn't tell you this when I came in, because I didn't want to put too much on your back, because there was my father was a victim of fraud. There was some check forgery, and an officer, there was a clear paper trail as to who did it as well. And I don't know if y'all can get the guy, but there was a clear paper trail, and Officer Todd Edwards just up and refused to do a report. Sergeant Gary, to his credit, was reluctant, and he knew that the state attorney's office would be reluctant to pursue an old case, because it was back in 2003, but it was like $3,000 or $4,000, and I know, and I respect the fact that he is leery of pursuing this, but I explained to him that I found some case law. Now, I want you to remember one thing, and if you don't believe me, you can Google this or go to the Supreme Court's website. I nearly won in court for Terry Shiloh myself, and I can give you the case number or whatever, and you can look it up. But the bottom line is, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV or my website, but I know a little about law. And so the delay in the prosecution of the case with regards to my father, if sufficiently excused, were occasioned solely by the official negligence of the referee, and that would be Officer Todd Edwards. And this is 51 Southern 849. It's a 1910 case from the Florida Supreme Court, but it's still current case law. And the state attorney's office may not know it, but it's in the law books. And furthermore, it makes sense, too, because there were several times that I came into your, at least one time I came into your agency back when your agency was real old, frightening. You know, they give me the willies. I felt that I would be falsely arrested. I was falsely arrested once, actually, and the charges that the cops wrote, if you can look on my, I was only arrested once, it's easy to find out. The statements that the cops made were perjury because they contradicted what the audio said. They claimed that the dispatcher told me stuff that she didn't. They said that I was told to get out of the area, and I wasn't. So I was fearful of coming to your agency. And because of that, both the fraud case involving about $4,000 of stuff, the several checks that were written, that Officer Todd Edwards went there for one and a half or 2 hours to talk to him, as well as the records issue that's more recent. Both of those issues kept waiting because of the fact, one of them waited, the other one was more recent. And it was because I was fearful of coming in your department. I didn't want to get false arrested. So I wanted to apologize to you for having this thing stack up, but they were just backlogged. And now that your department is less corrupt than the dam snaps, and I can come in and not get arrested if I have a valid complaint or something, as long as I don't act weird or something.
Uh-huh.
So the bottom line is, I was going to bring the other issue to your attention because you're in the financial crimes area. Actually, they said that you're the sergeant over that. But Sergeant Gary said he was looking into it. If you wanted to keep an eye on it, it was on 833 North Lake Parker. In other words, the Bobby Watts Feed Shop. It was on 826 of 2003. The call to service number was 0300-71182. If you wanted to keep an eye on that or whatever. Sergeant Gary said that if he gets a chance, he'll try to swing by the shop and talk to my father. And I told him that my father is polite, he'll tell them the information. If he's real polite, he'll give them the routing numbers for the bank, and they can investigate it. And either they'll do something or they don't, but at least y'all can try. If y'all try and you fail and the state attorney slams you, I won't hold it against you at all. I will hold it against them if they do something, and there could be legal action against them. That's pretty much a guarantee, but I'm not going to do anything if I don't have to. If they do their job, then why do something? Why do I have to do something? I mean, I'm angry, but I'm not vindictive. So you see what I'm saying? I have control over my temper, but this is still wrong. A lot of people would get bent. But the bottom line is that if you went up to my father and said, well, your son's come up here making a pest of himself, he would clam up and just say, well, we're not going to bother you. He would refuse to give you any information because my father's just like that. He was angry, but he gave up on the case, and he actually even when we had something with the city out here where we had trash piling up, he asked me to not call them. He doesn't want to stir up stuff. He's afraid of his own shadow. He was born in 1935. He's very old, and his health is declining. And the reason that I called and talked to CID, I couldn't get you, I got Sergeant Gary, they transferred me down since you were busy earlier, is because I want this to be at least looked into while my father's alive. because that would benefit him. It can only benefit him when he's alive, and he was born in 35.